Hi, everybody. My name is Robert. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, back. It's good to be in an AA meeting and looking out at a bunch of drunks. let me get to my stats. My stats are, my sobriety date is March 12th, 1992. My home group is the Living Now Group. And my sponsor is Phil P. Now, as my sponsor always says, get to your drinking. So let me get to my drinking. I grew up in Harlem. See, I grew up in New York City, so I've seen how it changed. But when I grew up in Harlem, we was poor. We were so poor we couldn't afford the ODR. Papa was a Rolling Stone. So my mother had to have rent parties. And if anybody don't know what a rent party is that they sold fish dinners and chicken dinners. They sold booze out of the kitchen, and they had a poker game. And on occasion, when we didn't get enough money for the rent, they had a waistline party. And a waistline party is when you take a measuring tape and you put a denomination on it, like 10, 15, 20 cents, and you measure them, and that's what they have to pay to come into the party. But I picked up my first drink before at this rent party. And my first drink was out of a Hellman's mayonnaise jar. And I was a guzzler from the beginning. You could put me in a high chair and wheel me into Alcoholics Anonymous. My first drunk was, I found one of my mother's half a pint of Seagram 7 hidden one of those Castro convertible couches. So I'm dating myself. And see, I had all the isms long before I picked up my first drink. I was always in search of. And my drinking took me everywhere. See, my father, today I can say, was an alcoholic. And he died as a result of this disease. My older brother died as a result of this disease. See, Alcoholics Anonymous told me that I had an allergy to alcohol. I had a mental obsession and an allergy to alcohol. And that's what they talk about in the doctor's opinion. I didn't know all of this stuff until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. But I drank. I grew up in a bunch of secrets and lies. I had a lot of secrets, so I had to tell a lot of lies. And to keep those lies going, I had to drink. So I was a regular layer cake. So growing up in Harlem, one of the things that I like to do is I like to dance. And I became a dancer. But my mother didn't know that I was a dancer till I was 15 years old. See, when you're growing up in Harlem, in the 60s and the 70s, how do you tell the guys on the corner that you like ballet? How do you share with them that while they're going to the court, well, where are you going, Robert? Well, I'm going to twirl. How do you have those discussions in Harlem? See, I needed a drink. We had a guy in the neighborhood, his name was Thunderbird. I grew up on 15th Street between Madison and Fifth in Harlem. And he would say 60 twice. But we had to watch out for Thunderbird because he had a long throat. You know, he would throw his head back. And when we would send him into liquor store and get that pint, and he would throw his head back, and it longed, though we had to snatch the bottle from him because the way he structured his neck. I said, Thunderbird, you know? So that's how I drank. And he drank, and we drank. The secrets was, growing up in Harlem, and I like dance, another one of the secrets that I was gay. Didn't understand it, but I was gay. But I was suffering from a lot of internalized homophobia. So I lived two lives. I had a set of clothes when I was in Harlem. And you know where 110th Street, where Central Park starts, there was the bushes. And in the bushes, I carried a knapsack. And in the bushes, that's where I changed that. And if y'all remember Fame, remember Leroy? Remember Leroy with the cutoff shirt, the basketball shorts, and the leg warmers? That's who I was. See, I can twirl downtown then, but I would not wear that outfit in Harlem. It just wouldn't be accepted. But let me just give you some of the episodes. I went on tour. My mother, the reason why my mother found out that I was dancing and I used to, how I paid for my dance class is that I paid for my dance class because I used to help the old ladies from the supermarket borrowing my mother's shopping cart. And I used to shoe shine shoes at the old Metropole Cafe on 7th Avenue and 49th Street. So I couldn't tell anyone. See, all of those things I had a shame about, those things that were good for me, I had a lot of shame about. I had a lot of shame about being an artist. I had a lot of shame about the way I talk. They said I talk white. And I used to say, no, I read books. You know? So it was all of that kind of, so I had a lot of shame about all the good things. So I drank. So my mother had to sign for me to go on tour, and that's how she found out. She didn't even know that I was that good. But it was just about me. I was just so shut down. I was so shut down. I had secrets. And what I heard in here is that we don't keep secrets. Secrets keep us. And so when I went on tour in Mexicali, Tijuana, and Ensenada. I was on tour, and I had been working with this lift with this woman. And in Mexico, I was drinking, you know, that tequila with the worm in it? You know? I didn't know it was, you know, the proof was, like, stronger than it was here. So I drank that tequila. And see, I was a fantasy person, always up in my head about something. And so this tequila told me that, you know, I'm drinking in the dressing room. So me and this woman had been working on this lift for about at least 6 months in rehearsals. So I was drinking that tequila. And I said, you know, maybe I can catch her differently. So when it was time for me to move on to the stage, she ran and she leaped. And I just watched her. Well, they caught her. The swingers caught her. I made amends, so she's all right, y'all. But that didn't stop my drinking. They gave me a spear and put me on the side of the stage because none of the women would let me lift them. Consequences of my drinking. My bottom was in Bed-Stuyvesant because I couldn't show up. And there's a lot of drinking in my story, but I want to just get to the recovery part as well, the solution. But my bottom was in Bed-Stuyvesant. I was living on Quincy Street between Franklin and Clawson. And Bed-Stuyvesant didn't look like it looks today. And my bottom was greasy. My bottom was so greasy, everybody I was with was greasy. The places I went was greasy. The things I used was greasy. So I was in my apartment. You know, Con Edison had come and gone. So I was living by candlelight. How romantic. And a lot of times when I drink, and my favorite drink when all was gone and I couldn't afford none of this, my favorite drink was Mad Dog 2020. I hear y'all grunting. Y'all must have drank it too. Because that stuff take paint off cars. But I drank that Mad Dog 2020. And a lot of times when I drink, I was into the visual arts. So I like to take off all my clothes. You know, I like to be naked when I drink. And everybody else who drank with me had to be naked. So it was dark in my apartment, the candlelight, you know. But I had been on tour in Africa and Kenya, so I have this spear. So when you're drinking like I drink, I was a two-fisted drunk, one for now and one for later. So when I was drinking that Mad Dog, and in that fantasy, I grabbed that spear because I needed to hunt. So before you know it, I was hunting, and I had forgotten that I was naked. And I went out my front door in the middle of Quincy Street, running naked with a spear in my hand, and I wasn't even in Africa. So I was a hot mess. So when you drink that wine, the guy had to reach down to the bottom and dust off the bottles before he gave it to me, because it must have been sitting there a while. But that's how I drank. And so how I got to Alcoholics Anonymous? I got to Alcoholics Anonymous because, you know, I had an education of sorts. And so I was able to get a job as a drug counselor. But I was drinking. So I was, you know, drinking. I couldn't, you know. So I was referring people to detox, to rehab, to AA. But you see, when you're sitting on this side of the desk and they sitting on that side of the desk, nothing is wrong with me. You see that dynamic? So there was a man working there. His name was Tony G. You see, I would get paid on Thursday and not come back to work till Tuesday. You know, somewhat of a extended weekend. And so Tony pulled me into his office. And he said, "Boy, they about to fire you. Because you got a pattern. You're not coming to work." So he pulled me in this office and he told me his story. And it clicked. I believed him. And it changed things. And everybody had been telling me about my drinking. My mom, my brothers and sisters, the man in the bodega. Everybody been telling, you know, the community, they said, you know, I have four aunts, church-going women, you know, with the hats and the fans. One day I was walking down the street trying to get by them. And, you know, they walking, and you know they see you. They fanning and seeing you. Fanning and seeing. And so I was trying to get around them. So they were walking. And I was doing this. And you know how they don't need to say anything? So they was fanning, so they wouldn't let me by them on the sidewalk. And every time I tried to get, they move wider, they would widen the thing. I said, these women need to let me go by. And and what happened was that, you know how you walk, you just had to walk the walk of shame. So I had to walk through them, and you know, they just fan, and this is all they said. Mm-mm-mm-mm-mm. And you know how you stepped in it? You know them, you know. Aunt Ollie and Aunt Beverly. Aunt Ollie was the roughest one. She was rough. She didn't take no stuff. So, anyway, Tony G, he brought me to the Living Now group, which is my home group. He brought me there. It was on St. Mark's on 8th Street. Now, that was a greasy room. That room was greasy. They had a 40-watt, but this is wonderful. This is pristine. I mean, thank you. This is pristine. I mean, they had a 40-watt bulb hanging from the ceiling on a single wire. You couldn't see no higher than this off the floor. Everything else was dark. They had a bunch of drunks in the back of the room. Every now and then, because they tried to monitor the booze, because it was on St. Mark's, everything would walk in there. Everything off the street would walk in there. And every now and then, them drunks in the back would have a reunited picnic. They would spread a white sheet and pull out the bottles, and the old timers had to run and put that. They had to take the bottles from the guys in the meeting, but they wouldn't put them out. And the miracle of it is that you would see those drunks get off that floor in their feces and in their urine and sit in the chair and get sober. Now, I had not seen that anywhere. But I saw that living now. So, I counted days. See, I couldn't count days. So, the beginners in this meeting who can count from what, I couldn't. I had to go to rehab because I was busted and disgusted. You know, I was a mess. I couldn't, I was just not coherent. And I went to this meeting. Tony took me to this meeting, the 1 o'clock meeting. That's how I got sober and in the weekend meetings. And when I got sober, they told me to come to the business meeting. And so I went to, business meeting. What's a business meeting? So, I got a sponsor. He took me to, they got me, you know. Back then, they kind of told you what to do, you know, because I was self-willed and riot. So they kind of told me what to do. So I went to the business meeting. And my first service commitment was that toilet. Now, everybody used that toilet. So you could imagine what that toilet looked like. Everything hanging over it, on the floor, whatever. And you know, I went to my sponsor. You know, because the first resentment you get is with your sponsor. Right? I went to him, I said, I need to talk to you. We got to talk. Because this, you told me, I come here to get sober, but I didn't come here to do that. This is a mess. Who you gonna clean this stuff? You know, they said, cool, go in there cleaning me. It is time for you to help somebody. You know, but that toilet kept me sober for 6 months. That was like, ooh, that toilet was nasty. Ooh, I think about it today. You just kind of slip when you walk in there. Oh. Ooh, but I cleaned it. And what happened was, this is when the fellowship started. What happened was the women in the room came to me and thanked me for cleaning the bathroom. So my friend, first connection was with the women in the fellowship. They said, thank you. We can use, you know. And that's how I connected with that. And when I got 6 months sober, I thought I was ready to be in a relationship. You know, we have those things and we're new. So what happened was, I went to my sponsor and he was speaking at the big meeting. It's always good to get your sponsor when he's happy. When he's smiling, kind of run to him when he's happy and smiling. So I ran to him and I said, oh, sponsor. He was shaking hands. And then I said, sponsor, can I be in a relationship? He shook, no. And he went, you know, I said, what? He said, well, I tell you what, you come to the business meeting, I'll introduce two people to you. So I came to the business meeting. Got all dressed up. You know how we do. We newcomers. We get all dressed up. I got all dressed up and went to the business meeting. They gave me the coffee pots. So those were the two people they were introducing me to, the two coffee pots. But I just want to read some of the things. See, I was incoherent. And when I came into AA, and this is what I brought with me. This is... You can see it's sort of tattered and got coffee stains off. This is 23 years old. Because I couldn't read. I heard you people saying, wonderful and great things, but I couldn't read. I was educated, smart, talented, but I couldn't read. And I didn't know what was going on. So I had to write down things that people said. And I asked my sponsor, it's all right. I said, I don't understand. I don't get it. I can't. It's not staying in. And so I wrote a few things down. One of the things I wrote down, it says, I heard a drunk say, anytime you get, his sponsor said, anytime he get a great idea, do the opposite. slip, sobriety losing its priority. You know, your attitude and behavior reflect your spiritual condition. Nuts. Oh, you're not crazy. You're nuts. Not using the steps. Mm-hmm. Also, I heard if you don't leave the basics, you don't have to get back to them. Mm-hmm. They said a lot of great things to me. Also, let me see if I can find it. This was really... Oh, once I pick up a drink, I can no longer guarantee my behavior. And I realized I needed a drink to make a major decision. And another thing that I heard is that I was whining about something, and my sponsor said to me, he said, Robert, you better pray for God's will, because that's what you're going to end up with anyway. That's one of those jaw-dropping moments. You said, what? So that was really, really helpful to me. You know, I understand that this is a soul sickness. And thank God I had somebody to take me through the steps. Especially the first three steps. I can't, he can, and I'm a letter. See, I had to understand that being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, that I'm cared for. And I didn't understand that. That's that third step. I used to miss that. I would read that third step and miss the word care. And a lot has happened to me. This is about hope. This is about the truth for me. Because I had a very low bottom. I became homeless. You know, in my eighth year, I became homeless again. My sister passed. And I was jobless. For drinking was not an option. My sobriety should have a separate track of its own. My sobriety is here, and life is here. There are no conditions here. I have to have a no strings attached sobriety. Life, it's going to be up and down. You're going to get the relationship. You're going to lose the relationship. You're going to get the job. You're going to lose the job. People are going to live. People are going to die. Things are going to happen. Crazy things are going to happen. Some days are going to suck. Oh, yeah. Some days are going to suck. But we don't drink. I had to have my sobriety have to be consistent and steadfast. And it's not negotiable. Because the way I drank, my judgment was impaired. I made real bad decisions. I remember my sponsor said something to me that was really helpful. And he helped me a lot. That's why it's important if you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous, get a sponsor. Baby, get a sponsor because you don't know how crazy you are. You need your stuff mirrored. you know, because thank you. And let me tell you about something. My sponsor is a longtime member of this fellowship. Actually, his story is here. His story's in the big book. He lived only to drink. That's my sponsor's story. So on my 23rd anniversary, and my sponsor celebrated 47 years, coming to 16. And so I wonder, I said, you know, that man ain't signed my book. And I want him to sign because his story's in here and I need him to sign my book. So, you know, I need him to sign my book, right? So I said, well, I need you to sign my book. You know, he said, so, okay. Robert, what do you want, you know? I said, what I want for my anniversary is this. I want you to write something in here that Helen, the social worker off the Bowery, who 12-stepped my sponsor into this fellowship, I said, I want you to write something that she said to you that changed your life. He said, Robert, oh, my goodness. He said, there's so much, but one specific thing that he wrote for me. So I'm going to read it to you. I'm going to share it with you. Okay. He wrote, Dear Robert, I want to share with you something that Helen said to me years ago. I had told her how well I was working this program and all the wonderful things I was doing. She said to him, she paused, and she said to him, you ain't done nothing. It was all done for you. It's about AA and not about you. It is such a blessing to stay out of the way of my sick ego. Thank you.